the What Bitcoin Did podcast.
Hi there, how are you all? Have you all settled back into the new year? My kids have gone back to school, so we can get back to work, which is cool. Welcome to the What Bitcoin Did podcast. I'm your host, Peter McCormack, and today I have an interview with two of my most favorite and hardcore Bitcoin maximalists. I've got Matt Odell, co-host of Rabbit Hole Recaps, and Neil Woodfine from Blockstream discussing what we would like to see for Bitcoin in 2019. But first, I have a message from my show sponsor, BlockFi, and great news from BlockFi. They have announced they're going to extend their sponsorship of the podcast, which is super cool. So I just want to say a big thanks to Zach and to Brad. Love working with these guys, and I really appreciate their continued support of the show. So listen, if you're interested in a crypto-backed loan, whether you're looking to pay off your credit cards or even buying a house, BlockFi helps crypto investors use their Bitcoin, Ether, and Litecoin without selling. BlockFi is the leading crypto to USD lender in the US. They service 47 states, and they've got interest rates as low as 7.9%. If you visit blockfi.com/whatbitcoindid, you can learn more about using your crypto without having to sell it. So on to my interview with Matt and Neil, and having published a crypto New Year's resolution show with Meltem, I wanted to also do a Bitcoin focused show for 2019. Regular listeners will know I've been getting drawn into the Bitcoin gravity, and the industry certainly feels like it's splitting into two camps, Bitcoin and then everything else. So in preparing for the show and in deciding I wanted to do a Bitcoin focused show, I wanted to get two of the most hardcore maximalists I know, because I wanted to do a real kind of deep look at what they would like to see for Bitcoin this year. So Matt, I met in New York, shared a few beers with him, and Zach from CoinPod, got to know him, got to understand his background and why he's such a hardcore Bitcoiner. Neil, I haven't met yet, but we've talked quite a bit. He's helped me with Blockstream and getting a couple of interviews together, kind of got to know a bit about him from Michael Dunworth at Wire. It was great to get him on though and talk to him about his views on Bitcoin as well. So I hope you enjoy this. Please do always let me know if you have any questions. And I do have to give you a quick profanity warning. Matt does drop a few F-bombs through the show, so if you're averse to a little profanity, you might want to skip this one. I'm pretty sure most of you will be okay with that though. Okay, just to remind you, I'm going to be heading out to Tonevay's conference in Vegas at the end of the month. I'm going to also be heading to San Francisco a few days after that. At Tone's conference, I'm looking to do a number of shows. I want to do kind of like a 10-year Bitcoin State of the Nation thing. So I'm looking to get some of the most well-known Bitcoin people and just talk to them about what they think of the last 10 years and what they hope for the next 10 years. So keep an eye out for that. If you are in Vegas, I'm going to be there, I think, from the 24th to the 27th. So if you are in Vegas, and then if you're in San Fran from the 27th afterwards, if you want to meet up, you want to have a beer, give me a shout. I'd love to meet up with you. And listen, if you want to support the show, I'm so grateful to everyone who does so far. If you follow me on Twitter, you'll know the show's been going really well. So look, firstly, I really appreciate everyone who helps the show. But if you do want to support the show, there's loads of things you can do. If you head over to my website at www.whatbitcoindid.com, you click on the support section, there's a whole bunch of things you can do. And I also do want to give a shout out to my first patron top tier sponsor, Elite Crypto Consulting, your personalized trading teacher. Thank you guys for supporting the show. Okay, so onto the show. If you do have any questions, feel free to reach out to me. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com, and I look forward to hearing from you. Hi guys, happy new year. How are you both doing?
Very good. Happy to be here.
Doing great. Thanks, Peter.
Well, it's great to have you both on. I've done a couple of kind of reflections on 2018 and a couple of predictions and hopes and predictions for 2019, but I wanted to do a Bitcoin specific one. And I was thinking, who are a couple of the most hardcore Bitcoin maximalists I know, the unrelenting Bitcoin maximalists who have no time for anything but Bitcoin? And I couldn't think of two better people than both of you. And listen, look, Matt, I've met you. We hung out in Brooklyn with Zach. We had a few beers and we got to know each other. And I haven't actually met you before, Neil, but I first became aware of you with a tweet you put out about thought leaders in crypto. I was like, whoa. And that was at a time where I was like definitely trading altcoins, interested in them. And I was like, who's this guy? He's got some front. And then I went out to San Francisco and I met up with Michael Dunworth. And he was like, oh, do you know Neil? And I was like, no. I was like, but I've seen some stuff of his. He's kind of like a scary maximalist. He's like, no, you've got to get to know them. You've definitely got to meet Neil. You'll argue with him. You'll fight with him, but you'll definitely get on with him. So you know Michael well, right?
That's right. Yeah, I'm amazed he's still my friend, given a kind of divergence of views on certain topics. But he's a good guy.
So before we get going, I think it'll be good to set the scene. So we'll start with you, Matt. Can you just let people know who you are, your background, what you do, and why you are so hardcore Bitcoin?
I'm just a normal Bitcoiner, I like to say. I discovered Bitcoin, 5-6 years ago, I guess now. And I've just been addicted to it ever since. And, but I never, one of the key things is I never left my day job. So I'm like, I'm able to be more independent, I think. I think one of the issues in the space is that, you know, everyone has a bag to sell you and they all have ulterior motives. And so I was able to stay independent. And during everything that's gone down over the last 2 years, I started meeting a lot of people in Bitcoin, you know, with the scaling debates and with SegWit 2x and co-opt Bitcoin, everyone trying to co-opt Bitcoin. And I just got more and more active. And now I'm doing a podcast with, as you know, I'm doing a podcast with Marty Bent, Rabbit Hole Recap. We do it weekly. You know, this is a particularly, it's going to be a particularly interesting pod for me because usually I'm drunk when I'm on air. And it's 9 in the morning here right now. So instead, I'm drinking espresso.
And Neil, it would be good to hear your background because you've got skin in the game. You've had some actual projects you've built and things you're working on. So can you just give people a background, how you got into Bitcoin, the projects you've been involved in, and also what you're doing now? Because that's kind of interesting too.
Yeah, so I didn't have any kind of background in finance, economics or technology when I was introduced to Bitcoin. I was working in the cement industry, but my friend sent me an article about Bitcoin. I saw that the chart was going up. I bought some. It was just at the beginning of the 2013 rally. So that got me very, very excited about it. I fell down the rabbit hole like many others and just got completely obsessed within the space of about 2 months and decided that I had to do anything I could to get involved in the industry. So I started at OKCoin, which was the largest Bitcoin exchange in the world at the time in China. And then later left that to start a startup called Remitzy with one of my former colleagues, Richard Bensberg, which was something called Remittance or Bitcoin Remittance, basically helping people remit fiat currencies using Bitcoin as the kind of the medium in the middle. And there was a lot of people doing it at the time. It turned out not to be a great model. I think a lot of companies have struggled since with that. Ultimately we sold that to Wire. I joined the Wire team. I worked there for a while and then later left to start a project of my own again called Clavestone, which is a project to help institutions store their Bitcoin in a decentralized manner so that the institutions themselves are holding their own keys. Also recently joined the Blockstream team and working on a lot of exciting projects with Blockstream as well.
And just a question for both of you before we start. Do you have any interest in any other project related to crypto outside of Bitcoin?
Nope.
Definitely not.
No. That's good. Well, that's why I wanted you both on because, you know, you both have different awareness of my own opinions that have gone from definitely a multi-coiner now to I only hold Bitcoin and Monero for different reasons. But try and keep an open mind, try and keep an appreciation of other projects and wonder, you know, will they have play any relevance? Are they worth considering? I'm feeling the gravity of Bitcoin. I definitely feel more drawn to it. But I thought it would be good to do a podcast focus entirely on what we'd like to see for Bitcoin in 2019. And I think I've proved myself correct that you two are the guys to start it with. So that's great. So before we do that, I just want to look back. Okay, so two very different years in 2017, 2018. It'd be interesting to see how you both reflect on the two different years. Because I also think, despite all these nonsense projects, I tend to think of them as having a net positive effect on Bitcoin. And I can tend to consider them like collateral damage for the growth of Bitcoin in that creating more awareness, trading shitcoins has had a use case for Bitcoin. But it'd be good to see you both of your opinion. So starting with you, Matt, how do you reflect on 2018 and 2017 before we start looking at the next year?
I think I'm kind of unique among the maximalists in that I don't think that altcoins are a threat to Bitcoin. I think altcoins are they're a threat to individuals who will lose money speculating on them. But as far as Bitcoin's concerned, Bitcoin doesn't give a shit. And one of the main use cases, the most popular use cases of Bitcoin is the altcoin casino. Like that is, people love to fucking gamble. And we see a lot of that. 2017, 2018, you know, 2017 was just the end result of everything the Ethereum crew wanted to happen. You know, they set up the whole playbook. They set up all the ICOs, the tokens. They made it, you know, super, super easy for a layman to trade those tokens. And then they threw their advisorships all around. So, you know, that's, no one should be surprised that when they set up this whole process and they, you know, they use pre-mine allocations and whatnot to make the markets less liquid and easier to pump, that would be the end result. And everything else went up with that. You know, when you had the Ethereum holders who, you know, the Ethereum ICO was horrible terms. You had absolutely horrible terms. If you actually read the ICO, I mean, I remember when I was reading the ICO terms, the network hadn't been launched. They were making massive claims. You didn't know what the supply was going to be. And those people got rewarded with financial return. And then you had the DAO hack. And when the DAO hack happened and they rolled it back and you know, changed the immutability of the chain to give themselves back money and give the other people who invested in the DAO money. Those people that stayed along obviously didn't have, you know, these strong censorship resistant principles. And they just flooded into all these other projects that were also shit projects. And you had this, you know, chain reaction. As far as Bitcoin's concerned, I think Bitcoin, you know, goes up in a cycle with the halvings and with adoption. And I think we probably would have seen the same style of Bitcoin pump as we did in 2017. It might have been a little bit softer without Ethereum driving everything up. We might not have hit as high. I also think that without Trump, we probably wouldn't have gotten as high so quickly, because I think Hillary would have been way better at regulating this shit and trying to stomp this stuff down. So we're probably a little bit ahead of progress of where I expect it to be. But I think this is just the, you know, the healthy progression of Bitcoin. Is, you know, you're going to constantly see these bubbles and these pops, and then they trend up over time.
So I agree with Matt that altcoins are not a threat to Bitcoin, but I do think they are a threat to Bitcoiners in the long term, because these projects are pretty much 100% very questionable and will fail, and their failures will hurt a lot of people. And they could, these failures could be used as justifications to start regulating the industry quite heavily, which is not going to help anybody. And it's going to cause a lot of problems, not only for entrepreneurs, but also for Bitcoin holders. Now, like, I think there's a certain element of that that's going to happen anyway in certain jurisdictions, but I think the altcoin mania that we saw in 2017 was will contribute even worse to that. I think, like, it's a shame also that there's such an explosion of misinformation from the people running these projects, which confuses people about what this technology is about and what kind of the implications are. What can actually be achieved through Bitcoin, through this, like, fantastic technology. And I, like, one of the reasons that I think this stuff won't go away is because the people that are producing most of the misinformation are still profiting quite handsomely from it. They are basically socializing their losses and gaining all of the potential upside for themselves. So there's no kind of corrective profit and loss incentives to kind of halt this process. And so, like, in terms of things that looking forward to this year, I really wouldn't feel too bad about more pain, more kind of losses in the markets, because I think that's necessary to wash out a lot of this, a lot of these problems.
I think that's a fair point, because it feels like Bitcoin keeps a lot of these projects alive, right?
How do you mean?
So in terms of the pricing, because as the price of Bitcoin crashes, kind of everything else tends to crash, right? It's the market's so correlated.
And when the price pumps, the everything else pumps along with it, as everybody engages in the casino, like Matt says. And I think this also creates another broader problem for the industry, in that everybody becomes compromised. So Matt definitely said it the best. The fact that he has not joined the industry makes him an independent, and that allows him to see things more strongly, be a lot more frank and honest about his opinions. Now, like, I've tried to do that as much as I can within the industry, but there's limits to how much you can do that. I've been very lucky to work at companies that have been sympathetic to my maximalist views, such as at Wire. But like, it's very difficult to turn a profit in the industry unless you at least kind of give some kind of acceptance to other cryptocurrencies. And in some way, I feel like that's kind of contributing to the problem.
Yeah, it's a very interesting point. It's a dilemma I face with the podcast, right? It's which advertisers I work with. Is, as this is now a full-time gig for me, I rely entirely on Patreon and advertisers. And I'm often thinking about, you know, who to have on the show, which topics to cover, and opinions to have. And you know, it is sometimes in the back of my mind that I'm alienating 50, 60, 70% of my potential advertisers by focusing entirely on Bitcoin. But sometimes you have to say, well, what's the right thing to do?
100%. And like, I think, like coming around to time preference, we have to think about where this is going. And if Bitcoin succeeds, like, our reputations are going to be very valuable. We're all going to do very well out of this if Bitcoin succeeds. And I don't think it's worth selling out and causing potentially more damage right now for kind of short-term profit at the expense of the long-term.
All right. And then before we look at 2019, I do have a question again for both of you. And it's a question I ask in a lot of my interviews where I'm with Bitcoiners, and I'm usually trying to avoid getting a functional technical description. But we'll start with you, Matt. Like, what is Bitcoin?
Bitcoin is better money. Bitcoin is the best money we've ever had. And that alone is gonna change the world. It gives people for the first time ever, like, an easy ability to store their wealth independent of their governments. It separates the state and money.
I wrote a tweet storm on this. So essentially, what Bitcoin is a man-made technological solution to the money problem. So in the past, we would only use found objects. We could only use found objects to fulfill the money role. Gold, essentially. We couldn't create anything more sophisticated than that for various reasons. Like, we could try and do it with paper or with all sorts of other kind of technological innovations, but none of them could create true scarcity. And if you think of anything else in our lives, we currently use lots and lots of man-made objects to make our lives a lot easier. I mean, compare it, like, clothing to, like, fur coats that, like, cavemen were wearing, right? And so essentially what Bitcoin is a super optimized technology for solving a medium of exchange and a store of value, basically all the roles that money plays.
So looking forward to this year, I was about to say to 2019, but we're here now, looking forward to this year, but also reflecting on 2018. Like, on a personal level, if I can get over the huge financial losses, which is actually not that hard to do, I actually think 2018 was a more important year, because 2018, everything that's happened, the bear market is bringing us closer to a truth, and the truth of what is real and what is nonsense within this, let's say, broad crypto landscape. Looking ahead to 2019, I'm going to leave it open and broad, but I'll start with you, Neil. What would you most like to see?
I'd like to see more pure Bitcoin commercial projects. right now we see a lot of short-term thinking. Businesses that are built around altcoin models. We're seeing stable coining getting a lot of steam these days. Some of the biggest companies in the space are fiat to crypto exchanges. But all of these things, if our hypothesis is correct, and we increasingly see hyper-Bitcoinization, adoption of Bitcoin within the economy, all of this kind of exchange-centric, all of these exchange-centric business models start to make a lot less sense. And I think it's much more important that we start building the financial infrastructure that's going to be required as Bitcoin slowly takes over. And so, like, I think there's a number of good examples already in the industry. Like, there's a lot of very interesting stuff going on, but I'd like to see more of that. I think recently there was a tweet from, I forget her full name, a Coinbase alumni, Preetha, I think her name was. Preethi, thank you. Yeah. Criticizing Terdemista and Bitcoiners in general for, I mean, I'm paraphrasing here, but just shitposting on Twitter and not actually building things. Now, like, that is a gross exaggeration and is certainly not true. Like, Bitcoiners are actually building some of the, like, most important stuff in the space right now, actual productive projects. But I do think there's a small element of truth to what you were saying. And I might get hung for this. But I think there is a lot of talk from Bitcoiners and a lot of people that know better than the rest of the industry and yet are not spending their time contributing to Bitcoin projects. That's not a shot at you at all, Matt. Like, it's a decision that you've made personally. But, like, I think broadly, it'd be great if we saw more people getting involved, and there's so many areas that need work. That's something that I'd really like to see.
Though I would say also, like, it's where you consider work. So I'm not really building anything, but then I educate with the podcast. Matt educates with the podcast. Matt scares people into not going anywhere near altcoins. So we could contribute in different ways. How do you feel about that, Matt?
I think it's kind of ironic because Preethi's big thing right now is that she raised $12 million, like a worse version of Twitter. True story, which is where she is responding to Tur, is her project. And basically it's like a glorified forum where they post these things and then they all argue back and forth over whether or not it's right. And she raised $12 million for that. I'm pretty sure it was $12 million. For that privilege, and it's going to have its own token, and it's just that whole garbage all over again. So I think that's a little disingenuous. As far as shit talking on Twitter, I think we all should do less of that. I do agree with Neil in that respect. I happen to be particularly good at shit talking on Twitter, so it's become a natural fit for me. And I have a project that I've been working on the side that's a Lightning project that I'm not ready to announce yet, but I've been working on that. You know, part of my issue is I live in America, and I think that what we've seen over these last 2 years is that there's been a bit of a perversion in this space. People have lost the plot. I think that the most interesting use cases of this new money and distributed networks in general are quasi-legal things. You know, we get the benefit. The reason these systems have less friction is because you're not complying with regulations in the first place because they're regulatory resistant. The second you start adding KYC, AML, all these different regulatory compliance things, it defeats the whole purpose. You're better off, you know, using an AWS or using one of these at least semi-centralized solutions. So a lot of the things that I actually think are worth doing, I can't do as an American. I can't do properly as an American. So instead, I've focused more on the education side.
Quite interesting you talk about the KYC AML thing. And also, we'll come back to Preethi and the true story thing. But
recently, obviously, Tim May passed away, and, you know, I probably don't know or appreciate enough of his background, although I'm certainly aware of who he is. But, and I've brought this up in a couple of interviews recently, is his CoinDesk article. I don't know if either of you read it, but something in that really stood out to me, where he said, "I can't speak for what Satoshi intended, but I sure don't think it involved Bitcoin exchanges that have draconian rules around KYC, AML, passports, freezes on accounts, and laws about reporting suspicious activity to the local secret police. There's a real possibility that all the noise about governance, regulation, and blockchain will effectively create a surveillance state, a dossier society." And I was a little bit like, whoa. Yeah, you're probably right. And then he goes on to talk about, like, if Satoshi is still here now or seeing this, he would likely be starting to work on something new outside of Bitcoin. Did you see that at all, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, I read it. It was good. I have a lot of respect for Tim. I don't think that... I think that, you know, KYC-enabled exchanges are inevitable. I don't think you can really hold it against Bitcoin per se or Bitcoiners. You know, whenever you have the regulated system meeting the unregulated system, you have fiat banking, you know, they have to have banking relationships. They're going to have to comply with KYC. I think the important thing is that we can design these systems so that compliance isn't necessary, and there needs to be more focus on that. And a lot of times that doesn't have as direct of a profit motive, which is why development on that front is inherently slower than these regulated VC backed Silicon Valley backed companies and projects. And then last, I would say that I think that if it's handled improperly, if we go down the worst case scenario, there is a scenario here where we end up with a way worse money and a way more trackable, way more useful for oppressive regimes. But I don't think that's the path Bitcoin's going on. I think the bigger threat is if you know, you had some kind of, I think it's a way bigger threat without Bitcoin existing for us to end up in that result, because that's the end game anyway. We are already going into a digital, without Bitcoin, fiat was going digital anyway. It's already mostly digital. They track everything we do. All my peers in my age group use Venmo all the time to send money back and forth. They're using PayPal. They're using their credit cards. They go and they buy a $4 coffee. They're using their credit cards, Visa, Google. Everyone's tracking all of that. So that's the end result with or without Bitcoin. And Bitcoins are one real shot at stopping that from happening, I would say.
Yeah, and going back to, and I'm keeping notes here because there's lots of things we're unpacking here, but just going back to my question to Neil, and it was quite a broad question, but also, what are you hopeful for in 2019?
I don't need anything big. I'm pretty... 2018 was created a lot of new maximalists. It taught a lot of people that you have Bitcoin and then you have imitators. It was very good on the regulatory front. I expected it to be a lot worse. I think macro issues that are outside of Bitcoin could have some effect on the price here. So it should be interesting to watch play out. And I'm excited to see, obviously I'm excited to see where Lightning goes. I think that we're going to hopefully be able to get the Schnorr upgrade in, but not this year. So it's with bear markets, these years tend to be more quiet, more behind the scenes focus. Everything is, you know, building up. And you won't get like major headlines. I don't think people should be like super excited for like an ETF. We probably won't get an ETF this year. BACT is going to continue to be delayed. People are going to keep screaming at the charts, wondering why the news isn't raising the price. And this will all lead up into the next halving, and then Bitcoin will do what Bitcoin does.
One of the things I'm kind of looking forward to, Neil, you talked about more commercially successful pure Bitcoin projects. I'm interested in more projects which blur the line between Bitcoin and the traditional world. So, for example, crypto being a little bit, or say Bitcoin being more integrated with the traditional world, more people accepting payments, it becoming easier for people to use. Because I feel like one of the problems we have with Bitcoin is that if it's all Bitcoin-only projects in this whole Bitcoin-only ecosystem, it kind of blocks a whole group of people out there. But we have to find the natural use case for people to actually want to use it. How do you feel about that?
So I think it's already emerging with the content industry. We're seeing that MasterCard and Visa are now starting to make moral judgments on what should and shouldn't be said, and then putting pressure on content platforms. Like, that's already happening, and it's only going to increase. And I think that creates an excellent new space for Bitcoin to operate in. I think there's already a lot of spaces where Bitcoin makes sense. Obviously, drugs and gambling, which are legal, but also have difficulty with maintaining bank accounts. Bitrefill, I think, are a good example of somebody that are using Bitcoin payments. I mean, for me in Thailand, topping up my phone on the internet, Bitcoin is my only option through Bitrefill. So, like, there are all sorts of these kind of niche use cases. But then also, I think obtaining Bitcoin is only going to get harder. It might not be a global phenomenon, but certainly in many jurisdictions, Bitcoin exchanges are going to be feeling the heat of KYC, AML. They're going to be feeling the heat of their banks closing things down. We probably, as like the financial system starts to falter, going to see some blame laid at Bitcoin's feet. We're already seeing Bitcoiners being described as extremists. Like, that narrative is already starting. So we can expect one day in the future, in certain jurisdictions, obtaining Bitcoin through exchanges is going to be very, very difficult for most people. And in that case, we're going to need alternatives for people to onboard, alternatives for people to get their hands on Bitcoin when they want it. And I think the only way to do that properly is through trade, through people getting paid in their salaries or for selling goods and services, receiving Bitcoin in exchange. And I think, like, seeing solutions both Lightning and on chain for those use cases is going to be really important.
Well, one thing on the onboarding front I'm super excited about is Cash App. It's Bitcoin only. They already have more downloads than Venmo, which a lot of people don't realize. I think I tend to agree with Neil. I think we're like kind of in a honeymoon phase where it's easier to get Bitcoin now, and it will get harder and then easier again. There will be a, and then they fight phase. I expected it to be already happening more than it is. So at least in America, which is kind of the bellwether for the rest of the Western world, they seem really distracted and confused. I think Ethereum actually kind of helped us in this regard. Because there's so much shit going on there that they're more focused on that, you know, or is this a security? Is this a fraud? Is this whatever? And they've kind of, you know, does anyone, I don't, if you asked me 2 years ago, is the US government going to ban Bitcoin? I would have given it a pretty high percentage. But if you asked me today, did we pass the point of no return? Did we pass the point where they won't actively, you know, put a law in the books saying you can't own it? Maybe we might have. I would have never said that before. So I think that's a big bonus. But yes, I think I do agree with Neil that on a worldwide level, these governments are going to start fighting back. You see them doing it in India. You see them where they already had the precedent of banning large cash bills. So it's in their nature. But in its core, in its essence, Bitcoin takes power away from these governments and the people that are in these governments and the corporations that are aligned with these governments. and gives it back to individual people who can control their wealth, move their wealth the way they want to do it. And they're absolutely going to fight back. And we got to be prepared for that. You know, your solution to that can't be, please, regulators, don't regulate me. You know, it has to be an actual solid technical solution to make it way too expensive for a nation state to take it down. That's where the whole development focus of conservatism and censorship resistance and robustness is so important.
But do you think one of the reasons we've passed that point of no return is that the US government has realized they can't take it down? Or do you think it's because they see a commercial advantage to having more Bitcoiners in America than in, say, China? How do you feel that's come about?
I think they can, they obviously can still take it down if they had the willpower and the actual desire to do it. I mean, when you start talking about the realm of drones and cruise missiles and shit, like, these networks aren't nearly resilient enough to handle the US government actually wanting to, you know, making it a priority to take it down. I think Bitcoin has two things going to its advantage. You have the greed element, where these people can make a lot more money if they go along with it than if they fight it. You know, governments are naturally set up to pump this shit. You pass bad regulations, you buy a ton of Bitcoin, and then you pass good regulations and you open it up, and then boom, it's pumped. But the big thing for me is that we got CME and CBOE. We have regulated futures products in America. Like I was saying before, I don't think that probably wouldn't have happened if Trump hadn't got elected. If we had Hillary elected, they probably never in a million years would have given that to us. And then once you have these rich people in America who have massive amounts of political influence buying it, a full ban becomes just way, way, way less likely. I do think we could end up in a situation where they like put on the books like a formal disclosure, like you have to, every year you have to tell the government how much Bitcoin you own. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's so important to work on your privacy now, so that if those rules do come into the books, you'll at least have some plausible deniability about how much Bitcoin you do have.
Next up, I talked to Matt and Neil Moore about their hopes for Bitcoin in 2019. But before that, I have a message from my show sponsors. So first up, BlockFi. And as I mentioned in the intro, they have extended their sponsorship of the show, which is super cool. And so much has happened for them in 2018. Former Managing Director of Equity Markets at BOA Merrill Lynch, René Van Kesteren, joined BlockFi as Chief Risk Officer. They expanded their lending footprint worldwide, and they now also cover 47 states in the US, including California. They raised a whopping $52.5 million in funding, including from Mike Novogratz, Galaxy Digital Ventures. They added support for Litecoin as collateral and stablecoins as a funding option. Mahesh, the former CTO of Factum, joined as their chief technology officer, and they also raised an additional $4 million in funding led by Acuna Capital. As part of that fundraise, they announced some new products coming in 2019, such as BlockFi users being able to earn interest off their Bitcoin, and they've also got a crypto credit card coming. 2019 is going to be a huge year for BlockFi, so I recommend you check them out. I recommend you follow them on Facebook, on Twitter, and just keep an eye on everything they're doing. And remember, if you are interested in a crypto-backed loan, then head over to blockfi.com/whatbitcoindid to learn more about using your crypto without having to sell. I also have a new advertiser to tell you about, Blinkist. Pretty cool, right? Do you know these? I've been using them for a while. So funny enough, when they got in touch, I was like, yeah, cool. I use your app, so no problem. You can definitely become a sponsor. With so many great business books out there, all the ones you want to read, all the ones people suggest to you, but you don't have time to get through them all, Blinkist solves this with their app. They condense down the key takeaways and need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books into a 15-minute read. I tend to use Blinkist when I'm researching my work, or I've been recommended a book I kind of want to get through. I don't have the time to sit down for a few days and read the whole thing, so I get onto Blinkist, I go through the summaries, and you know what? They do also cover crypto books. They've got Nathaniel Popper's Digital Gold and The Age of Cryptocurrency by Paul Vigner and Michael Casey, and so many other great books by business leaders that you've heard of. They are definitely worth checking out. And they also have a special offer for the listeners of the podcast. If you head over to Blinkist.com/WBD, you can start a 7-day free trial. So you haven't really got much to lose. That's Blinkist, which is spelled BLINKIST.com/WBD to start your 7-day free trial.
And therefore, do you believe there'll be a continuation and a growth in a black market for Bitcoin?
Yeah, I mean, the main use case for all of this stuff is quasi-legal. So I mean, I black markets are a more private way to buy Bitcoin. So there should be at least a pretty strong market, and in some cases, there'll probably even be a premium.
Right. Neil, one of the things I've been looking at quite a bit is, and I mentioned this quite a few times in a few of my podcasts, when looking at altcoin projects, there seem to be a number of seemingly smart people who are heavily invested in Ethereum or tokens or other projects. And there are a number of funds who are heavily invested in a number of these projects. A lot of them appeared in your hit list, in your tweet that I mentioned. If the scenario plays out that some of these projects, the price starts heading towards zero, there isn't a proven use case, do you see a scenario where like these venture capital companies might start moving their investment towards Bitcoin? Or do you think there is like a reluctance towards Bitcoin because they don't have any control?
I think there's considerable ideological opposition to Bitcoin. A lot of them are not willing to logically follow through the implications of what Bitcoin represents. A lot of these people are very kind of big government interventionist, pro-regulations. And unfortunately, Bitcoin doesn't fit within that box. And so I think it's very difficult for them to get on board. That said, if there's money to be made, I think that will override their kind of their ideologies to some extent. I think what's more likely to happen as Bitcoin has become more wealthy is that we see a subsidence of the traditional Silicon Valley VCs, and we start to see more kind of angel seed investment types coming from within the Bitcoin sphere itself. And I think for Bitcoin companies, that's going to be very important because you need VCs that are aligned in your vision, aligned in their thinking about where all of this is going, because otherwise it becomes very difficult to run your company.
But you must have had some experience of dealing with VCs in relation to Bitcoin projects.
Yeah, I think most of them are looking for a token that they can dump on their retail market as fast as possible. They are very, very profit driven. They want to get rid of these things. And also they don't have to start like thinking about dangerous things when getting involved in like Twitter with a token or Uber with a token, right? Like that's not a particularly kind of rock the boat, world changing, power structure destabilizing technology, right? Whereas like replacing central banks, that's a big deal. And then you've got to start to kind of answer some very, very difficult questions, both to yourself and to other people. And I think like when talking about pure Bitcoin projects to Bitcoin and some of the Bitcoin and blockchain VCs, you have a much better time. They understand, and despite what they might say publicly, they also hold some similar, if not exactly the same, views. I think another big problem is that if you're a very big believer in Bitcoin, if you're a VC that's a big believer in Bitcoin, it becomes very difficult to justify an investment in a startup, which is highly, highly risky, and not just invest in physical Bitcoin itself, because the returns on physical Bitcoin are insane, and the risk reward of investing in a Bitcoin startup is pretty it's pretty risky. So I think a lot of Bitcoin projects face this problem, and For that reason, a lot of them are going to have to accept the reality that they'll have to self-fund and run on their own revenues in the early stages.
I mean, you're basically setting up a path here where you're going to have Bitcoin companies that are bootstrapped by rich Bitcoiners. And I don't, you know, it's a slower process because you don't have all that Silicon Valley money pouring in. But it should get the job done, and you'll have more ideologically pure companies that are more aligned with their customers.
But that's not such a bad thing. Like, if you look at all these startups that raised funding during 2017 with their ICOs, very little has shipped. A lot of what has shipped has been largely unusable. They've been unable to attract users, and the incentive model's broken. People have made it rich before they've launched their project. I've been a huge critic of people who've not followed the basics of understanding, you know, things like lean methodology, customer factories, UX design. And so that's not necessarily a bad thing, right?
I think it's more organic and more natural, and you'll probably have more solid products appearing from it.
Did you have a similar thing, Neil, when you were building your business, in that you kind of had a different time preference? It was a bit more bootstrappy, a bit more hard work.
We were very lucky with Remitzi. We received a seed investment from an investor who believed in us in the very early stages. So it wasn't something that we really had to worry about. Also, I think it should be highlighted that we weren't a pure Bitcoin business. We were very much like at the intersection of Bitcoin and fiat, and saw all of the gory details of that. I think for me personally, for the foreseeable future, I will only focus on Bitcoin-only projects, because as soon as you start touching fiat, you're captured by all sorts of KYC and AML stuff. You're spending more time interfacing with regulations, working out how to sell product in the face of them. And it's just huge amounts of wasted time. I mean, that as a side note, that says a lot about the current economy that we work in today. Like, banks, I think, are majority compliance staff these days. The amount of societal waste that goes into all of these regulations is really sad. And I think just on a personal level, it's something that I want to avoid so that I remain productive.
Okay, well then, looking forward for these pure Bitcoin companies, what are the biggest challenges there that you, as somebody's building in this space, but other people building the space, what are the biggest challenges you think that they will face?
I think adoption is difficult. Like, so there's not many people actually pushing Bitcoin around, just Bitcoin itself. So it's difficult to capture any of the value from the flows there. I think still the vast majority of people are just using Bitcoin as an investment, as a store of value, as like an escape from fiat systems. And there's a limited set of business models that you can create which will capture value there. I think micropayments, a brand, they're possible now for the first time ever. So Lightning could start opening up brand new business models, such as paying for content and API calls, all sorts of interesting things that could emerge from that. So I'm hopeful about that. But I think the key problem is getting creative on how you can kind of capture value with a business from the Bitcoin economy as it stands.
And I guess any company, even as a pure Bitcoin company, there's going to be some interface with fiat in one way or another, because you still got to pay staff. All the staff, even if they're paid in Bitcoin, they still then have to transfer some money back into their local currency. We're not at the stage where you can live purely on Bitcoin, or are you going to tell me that I'm wrong there?
I think there's a few people that have proven that it is entirely possible. And I think at some point, like, it may be necessary for, if you want to create a successful Bitcoin business, to take the hit and go pure Bitcoin along with some of your staff. I think there's enough kind of hardcore Bitcoiners in the world to at least hire a few people that would be willing to do that. Also, that Bitcoin to fiat exchange is a lot easier for an individual than it is for a company. So I think it would be possible for like the company to run on Bitcoin only, and then leave that kind of horrible process of getting into fiat to its employees. So I think it's possible.
Still a risk though, I guess. Like, if you got paid in Bitcoin, there's a sudden price drop and you can't pay your rent. there's still a risk. It's going to take some heroes to actually kind of run the experiment full time.
I mean, Bitcoin price drops are big, but they're not like kind of, I can't pay my rent big. Like you should have a salary which is at least like 30% above your the cost of your rent, right?
How about you, Matt? How do you feel? What do you feel about some of the biggest challenges for Bitcoin companies?
Well, it's going to get easier. Just to expound on that point, like it'll get easier over time to live your life Bitcoin only and live your business Bitcoin only, where you don't have to connect to the regular banking world. I mean, and it depends where you're launching the company, right? Like if you're a Venezuelan coder or web designer, right? Like I'd much rather have my money in Bitcoin than in the Bolivar. And that's right now. So as you see all these macro situations happen around the world, and you see the collapse of these weak economies, starting from the weaker economies up to the stronger economies, then it'll make more sense for people in those places. And at the same time, Bitcoin will be getting more liquid, more valuable, and you'll be able to spend it in more places. You know, right now there's a lot of people talk about, you know, you had like the Bitcoin Cash, Bitcoin ideological war between, you know, is it a store of value or is it a medium of exchange, something that you spend it on? It will inevitably be both, but right now there's a very little incentive to spend Bitcoin unless you're in this situation that Neil was talking about, where you're actively trying to stay out of the existing system. Like I would much rather, you know, spend my fiat on my coffee because I want to hodl my Bitcoin because I think it's going to go up in value. I'm not going to spend, you know, pay 3%, 4% to acquire the Bitcoin only to then go and spend it on something that I could have just spent on with fiat in the first place. So these things take time. You know, a lot of these use cases that these altcoins and these tokens pretended that they were targeting, Bitcoin will be able to target, but you have to be patient and you have to have your priorities in the right place. And now we're seeing that with Lightning, where we're getting the benefits of more centralized networks with low fees and really fast transactions without compromising the integrity of the main system, which is ultimately the most important thing here that we need to protect it at all costs.
And what about education? Like one of my resolutions for this year, which I've talked about, is helping improve education because, you know, like I've been obviously very close to Bitcoin for a couple of years now, and I'm still learning a lot. And there's so much still to learn. Yet trying to bring somebody new in and trying to explain to them so many different concepts and ideas, it's very hard. And there's so much misinformation out there as well. Like, how do you think we can approach education better, Matt?
I mean, I think it's better than it's ever been. I mean, you should have seen how. I mean, it was. Even 2 years ago, it was way more convoluted, way harder to find solid information. This goes along with, you know, what we were just talking about. These things, you know, they take time. There's a natural incentive here with Bitcoin in that all Bitcoiners are incentivized to educate and increase adoption because it makes their Bitcoin worth more. And I think that compared to a lot of other industries, it's pretty amazing how much access there is. The issue isn't accessing this information. The issue is there's too much noise. And it's parsing through that noise and parsing through, you know, who's trying to steal my money and who's actually providing solid information. But the good thing is that the information is there. We have the information. It's online. Anyone can get it. So all you need is the internet. It's pretty accessible. And the next step is really solidifying, you know, high signal, low noise resources. But in a distributed environment, you're never going to have it's never going to be like a perfect situation. And that's all right, because where we're going, like, people don't need to know how the nuts and bolts work. You know, they don't know how the nuts and bolts of the current money system works, or how the internet works, or any of this shit. They just know that they open up the app on their phone and it works like it works as intended. So it's got it. The only reason this education is so important right now is because we're all early adopters. We're like all way, way early adopters. And as Bitcoin matures, it'll become less important.
It's funny because having gone through the experience of making and then losing a lot of Bitcoin through poor trading, and a very poor effort at mining, another thing I'm focused on this year is, like, I have a base level amount of Bitcoin and I don't want that to drop at all. The limited amount I have left, but now I'm thinking, like, how do I make more Bitcoin? Like, what can I do across the year to make more Bitcoin and that number not go down? Perversely, a lot of the reason that a lot of people come into Bitcoin is like, how can they make more fiat? Like, how do I make more fiat money? And then you tend to at some point it clicks and it the kind of role flips, right? But to get from that point where you've just heard about it and people are making money and you want to make some more money to that actually caring about Bitcoin, it's kind of a big gap to jump. How do you think we help people with that, Neil?
So I think I'm a little bit different from Matt. I think Matt came from a little bit more of a libertarian freedom angle coming into Bitcoin. I didn't. I was definitely attracted by the fiat gains, the pump. And it was not until making the Bitcoin investment and educating myself online through the subreddit and watching Antonopoulos videos and all of that kind of stuff that I started to get more of the ideological side of Bitcoin. So I think, like, Bitcoin itself is an education, and I've seen this happen with multiple people, friends, people online, people that came for the profits and then slowly became converted to kind of a Bitcoin way of thinking. And, like, I think Dan Held talks about this a lot, how once you've bought into the Bitcoin idea, why is Bitcoin valuable? Why is it better than US dollars? Then you start to realize that a lot of economics is a crock of shit. Like, we've been lied to, or we're being misled on the nature of the money that we use and banking. And once you start questioning that, then you start to question all sorts of other things at a broader societal level outside of the monetary realm and outside of economics. So I think, like, buying Bitcoin and enjoying the gains that you gain from it is, like I say, an education in itself. So I forgot the initial question that you posed to me, but, like, another thing that I think is really important for education to improve in the industry is to have industry leaders start to take a much harder line on the blockchain and the crypto narrative. So a lot of these people have been around in the space for a long time. They know better, or should know better. A lot of them privately accept that most of the coins don't have a chance, or all of the other coins don't have a chance, and that Bitcoin is the thing to focus on. And yet in their public-facing marketing materials, they will talk about being part of the cryptocurrency industry. They will talk about being part of the blockchain industry. They'll talk about crypto and cryptocurrency on camera, in articles, rather than referring to Bitcoin. And I think for people like Matt and myself, and increasingly yourself, we start and realize that it's not the cryptocurrency industry, it's the Bitcoin industry. And we've got all of these other things tagged on. And so I think it's really important that more business leaders start being more explicit about what the nature of the industry is. They have to realize that by talking about crypto and cryptocurrencies, this kind of pluralist view of the industry, that they're causing a lot of the problems that we're seeing throughout, or at least contributing to a lot of the problems that we're seeing within the industry.
Quite interesting, because we had the narrative of moving to Bitcoin, not blockchain, after a lot of response from people like Jamie Dimon. And now Stefan Levera recently has really been pushing for the Bitcoin, not crypto narrative to be pushed forward. It's essentially what you're talking about, right?
100%. I think this word crypto should be dropped. I think it's in businesses' self-interest. I've said this at the businesses that I've worked at, like, talking about crypto and cryptocurrencies, like, these words will become maligned. So ICO happen very, very quickly. Like nobody talks about, even ICOs don't talk about ICOs anymore because they know that word has been tarnished. There was too many failures. It's avoided because it's associated with scams. Blockchain also is kind of increasingly associated with failure. You don't hear any of kind of the establishment people talking about it very much. You don't hear many of the crypto bros talking about it very much anymore. And I think it may take a bit longer for this to happen with crypto, but that's the destination that we're going to. And the faster businesses realize this, the more kind of longer term they start thinking, the better for their reputations and for also kind of all of these noobs and retail investors that are getting hit hard in these like really pretty awful markets.
I guess then, Matt, you are hoping for a lot of burn with all the other blockchain projects, protocols, tokens that are out there. You want a full year of them burning to the ground.
I mean, I personally am a fan of the burn it to the ground ideology in general. I think that people learn the most when their wallet is impacted. I think it goes both ways. You know, one of the best education experiences you can have with Bitcoin is buying some. And then once you buy some and start moving it around, you know, presumably start making money in fiat because of it, you're incentivized to then learn more. I am not so bold as to say that these projects are going to instantly go to zero. I can't believe that Ripple hit $3 last year and that it was pumped on CNBC. It absolutely fucking blew my mind. And I never would have called that in a million years. I think we will see this keep happening with these altcoin pumps and the flippening narrative, but it will happen with different altcoins. You know, the current crop will mostly go to negligible value. Let's say negligible value, because who the fuck knows what zero is? BitConnect doesn't even have zero. But there'll be new ones. And I have a feeling we haven't seen the proof of stake pump yet. You know, everyone's going to be hyping proof of stake. These guys, these VCs, they make way more money on the shit coins. They make way more money. Hopefully tokens are pretty much dead, because the tokens was like the biggest stretch. They're centralized tokens that are controlled by like two signing keys that aren't censorship resistant at all. They're absolute fucking garbage. But the altcoins, you know, they'll keep pumping in cycles. Hopefully the flippening narrative style stuff should probably go down after the next cycle. You know, Ethereum was the first real flippening narrative. No one ever before Ethereum was saying like Litecoin was going to supplant Bitcoin. They always just had that bullshit of, oh, it's the silver to Bitcoin's gold. Ethereum was the first real project that was like, it's going to be Bitcoin 2.0. Bitcoin's going to be nothing and Ethereum will take it over. But yeah, like Ripple is probably not going anywhere unless the US government fucking takes it down. Like, I fucking hate Ripple. I absolutely despise Ripple. But then you see certain things like one of the VC companies I respect most, one of the VCs I respect most in this space is Bogart's fund, Blockchain Cap. And they were, you know, they were seed investors in Ripple. They just did this whole like Russian doll thing with a Ripple fund where like Ripple Corp gave them XRP. They denominated the fund in XRP, then like invested it back into XRP. There's like this whole bullshit that happened. And unfortunately, like that's probably not over with yet. We probably haven't seen the bottom in most of these things, but you know, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Either way, Bitcoin doesn't care. Bitcoin will just keep trucking forward.
Do you think there's a more of an excuse to have been a seed investor in Ripple as a potential business or concept than there is for buying it now?
No, I think that anyone with an ounce of intelligence could look at Ripple when it was in its original creation stage and say, this is a short-sighted project that absolutely offers zero value prop, that is too centralized to actually provide any unique value here. But not centralized enough to compete with like the Venmos and stuff of the world. And they knew exactly what they were getting into. They knew, they were like, we can pump the shit out of this and it'll be really illiquid and we'll control the majority of the supply and we'll control the whole network and we'll just be rent seekers. And they knew exactly what they were doing. And like, at least if you're dumb retail and you're buying it, you're just an idiot and you're just getting fooled by them, you know, but these guys knew exactly what they were doing.
Okay. Fair enough. All right. So listen, look, we've done a good hour here. I think something you guys brought up to me and it's something I really enjoyed last year. One of my most favorite moments was Bitcoin Magazine announcing it's going Bitcoin only. I think you both got a lot of appreciation for that, right?
Well, I've always loved Bitcoin Magazine. Aaron's great. Aaron Van Weerdum. I think he's the editor there, but he's definitely their best writer regardless. You know, a lot of people don't realize, did you know Bitcoin Magazine's Vitalik's baby, right? That he sold it to BTC Media?
No, I didn't.
I think he still owns some. Yeah. Vitalik was the one who started Bitcoin Magazine.
Wow.
He sold it to BTC Media, who they own a couple of things. They own the Let's Talk Bitcoin Network and other things. So they're actually still a multi-coin company. And they're very much pro Ethereum in a lot of ways, but this particular asset, this single asset of Bitcoin Magazine, they've made Bitcoin only. So it's a little bit of a lip service, you know, it's a little bit of a PR move. It makes sense that we should have one asset in our portfolio that is just purely Bitcoin. But I do appreciate that because it's so hard, finding good news sources that I have to look through a bunch of different sources and put my filter on it before I broadcast it out to other people. Cause there's so much shit out there. It's always been very hard for me to have like a site where I could tell people, oh, you could go to CoinDesk and you know, anything you read there should be good, because that's not the case. They're constantly shilling ICOs. They're constantly shilling other things. At least now we're getting more news sites that don't have all that shit in there. So I can be like, you know, 99% of the stuff you read on this site is legit and you should be good to go.
Like Matt says, it could be considered a bit of a hedge. So they've got a lot of multi-coin publications and perhaps like many others within the industry, they actually understand where things are actually going. And this is a way of them getting some kind of investment in that future while still getting access to all of that profit to be made on all of the dodgy altcoins. That said, like, I like that Bitcoin is forcing people to do things like this. And like any movement by any company that makes their businesses more Bitcoin centric is great by me. So like, I was really happy to see that happen.
God, I feel like my podcast is a hedge now because I'm not like 100% Bitcoin. Yeah. All right. Well, listen, look, guys, this has been absolutely great. Loved talking to you both. Before we close out, two final questions. We'll go with you first, Neil. Throw out some predictions for 2019. What do you think is going to happen? What do you hope is going to happen? And also just finish off by telling how people can get hold of you and stay in touch.
So I think everybody's talking about the bear market and it's bad, but there hasn't actually been any real bad news. So 2014 was driven by China bans, like multiple, and Mt. Gox hack. We haven't had anything like that. So I don't think this is a full bear market yet. I think exchanges, global exchanges, are still very fragile. People don't realize that they have almost zero oversight and they haven't learned any of the lessons from Mt. Gox. So I'd not be surprised if in 2019 we saw another major exchange failure, which pushed us much lower, or another national ban on cryptocurrencies or something like that. So I think people like price predictions. I know they love price predictions. So I, I'd suggest that we go quite...
Don't need those.
We'd go a lot lower than we are now. And I think we'll definitely start to see more moves like the one that Bitcoin Magazine did. As people see the writing on the wall, that Bitcoin's around to stay, and that cryptocurrencies and altcoins are very transitory projects. So I think we'll start to see a lot more Bitcoin businesses, whether it's lip service or not, bending the knee to Bitcoin in their communications.
And how can people stay in touch with you?
So people can find me on Twitter at nwoodfine, and that's probably the best place to find me.
And you, Matt, throw me your predictions. Don't want any price ones. What do you think is going to happen? What you like to see happen, and how can people stay in touch with you?
Do you remember where we were January 3rd, 2018? We were like sitting up there. Everyone was making these ridiculous predictions.
Yep.
It's so hard to tell with this stuff a year out. I would say that I think the price will be, I know you don't want a price prediction, but I think the price will be higher this time. January 3rd, 2020, the price will be higher than it is today. I guess I added a day, it's the second. But anyway, I think we will see Ethereum falter with their constantly delayed proof of stake transition. I think we will see one of these VC-backed projects flipping Ethereum. Who the hell knows which one it'll be? And we'll see like some type of proof of stake hype cycle where they're saying it's better for the environment and it's the ultimate thing. And then that will ultimately culminate in a chain failure, a proof of stake chain disaster, where everything goes to shit because they don't have actual objective verification. And then we can finally put that to rest. Like there needs to be like a major proof of stake chain failure before all that bullshit gets put to the side. Hopefully we see Cash App integrate Bitcoin sales. Right now, they don't let you deposit Bitcoin into Cash App. Once they let you deposit Bitcoin into Cash App, then you should be able to spend it on their debit card anywhere that Visa is accepted. I don't really think that's that big of a deal, but it's just nice to have that checkbox off so all the centralized bullshit can't be like, oh, well, you can spend it in all the places, you know, so we can just get rid of that check mark. We'll see Lightning keep doing better. We'll see fungibility improvements, you know, Wasabi Wallet. I'm very, very bullish on Wasabi Wallet. And you know, we've been, for years since I got in, we've been waiting for user-friendly privacy tools, and we're starting to finally get them. Lightning helps with privacy a ton. I'm really excited about what Pierre's been doing with his node launcher. It makes it very easy to launch a Lightning node yourself and hook it up. Will O'Byrne created Jewel, which is basically my Ethereum wallet. No, not my Ethereum wallet. It's basically MetaMask, but for Bitcoin. And you run your own full node. He's actually comes from the Ethereum ecosystem, and he came back to Bitcoin and created this, and he used a lot of the UX principles that they were doing with, I think he was on the My Crypto team. So we'll see a lot of devs come that were Ethereum focused that have now opened their eyes, and they come in, they really like Lightning. Lightning's a very developer friendly platform. So like, I'm really excited to see what we get on that front. And I think Neil is like absolutely right. That in 2014, like people were talking about zero. People were talking about Bitcoin is going to zero, and that it's doomed for failure. And Ethereum was launching their ICO at the same time, and that was going to replace it. And everything was going to shit. Mt. Gox was a fucking clusterfuck. China banned Bitcoin maybe like 8 or 9 times that year, which is crazy that you can keep banning something that you've already banned. And I don't. That, you know, we've hit a point here where just with the halvings and the people that own Bitcoin already, we can continue this cycle, but new money will accelerate it, and new money will inevitably join into the fray as access becomes easier and whatnot. So, you know, it's amazing how bullish the fundamentals are today compared to a year ago when you compare the two price differences. Like Bitcoin had no business being at 19K when it was at 19K.
All right. And how can people stay in touch with you, Matt?
You can find me at Matt _ or Dell on Twitter. I'm on Keybase with the same name. You should check out our podcast, Rabbit Hole Recap, which we do weekly. We just get drunk and we talk Bitcoin.
All right, well, listen, guys, this has been fantastic. Exactly what I wanted, exactly what I had hoped. Hardcore maximalist, telling it how it is. I've learned a lot from both of you and continue my own personal education in this area. I wish you both a great year. Thank you for coming on. I think almost certainly it would be great to get back together a year from now, review what we talked about, and look at 2020 and see what will happen. But I wish you both an amazing 2019.
Sounds good. Thanks very much.
Cheers.
Okay, so what did you make of that? Did you enjoy Matt and Neil's take on Bitcoin? If you haven't listened to Matt on Rabbit Hole Recaps with Marty Bent, then I suggest you check it out. There's a link to that in the show notes. And also, if you don't follow Neil on Twitter, I recommend you following him. Give him a follow. He doesn't hold back. He's full on Bitcoin. I've learned a lot from him, so yes, I recommend that. And there's also a link to both of their Twitter profiles in the show notes. Okay, so listen, look, I'm not a full-on maximalist. I know I might sound like one sometimes. I'm not. I'm keeping an open mind. I do appreciate and sympathize with the views of maximalists, though. But for me in 2019, I'm mainly looking forward to having a play with Lightning, see how the infrastructure works, see how the infrastructure grows. I think that's going to be very exciting. But I am keeping an open mind for other things. I will be speaking to non-Bitcoin people, just trying to learn what other projects out there that might have some interest. Okay, so listen, if you want to support the show, there's so many things you can do. Firstly, you can just listen to the advertisers. Don't skip the ads. These guys want your ears. These pay for the shows to happen, so please do check them out. If you don't like the ads, well, then you can become a Patreon subscriber. It's $5 a month. I've got over 64 now, and basically you get an early version of the show without all the ads and my nonsense talking at the start of the finish. So head over to patreon.com/whatbitcoindid if you want to do that. If you want to subscribe to the show by Bitcoin, if you don't want to use Patreon, I've had a couple of people do that. Just email me. I'll send you the address, and then I can send you the show each week for you to listen to without ads and without me speaking on it. You can think about becoming a sponsor. I've had so many inquiries recently, so thank you to everyone who's inquired. I've got some new advertisers coming soon, which is going to be super cool. But yeah, feel free to reach out to me, drop me an email. We can schedule a call. You can leave me a review on iTunes or click on the subscribe button. That's super helpful. They help with my rankings in iTunes. So yeah, please think about doing that. You can follow me on social media. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Medium. I'm at What Bitcoin Did on everything. My personal Twitter is at Peter McCormack. I'm a bit of a troll. You might not like it. But yeah, feel free to follow me and reach out to me. My DMs are open. You can check out my website. I've got a whole bunch of work I now need to do on that again. It's always changing, but check that out at www.whatbitcoindid.com. You can also sign up to my newsletter on the website, and also you can share this show out with your friends and family, which is super helpful. Okay, so lots of cool, interesting stuff coming up. I've got interviews with Mike Dudas from The Block coming. I've got a Defending Bitcoin interview with John Carvalho, which is super interesting. So keep an eye out for that. And yeah, if you've got any questions, feel free to reach out to me. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com, and I look forward to hearing from you.